Welcome to the Merlin Podcast, bringing Europe's fresh waters back to life.
Europe's rivers, peatlands and wetlands are in trouble. Decades of drainage, pollution, straightening and damming have left freshwater ecosystems as the most degraded on the planet, losing biodiversity faster than forests, faster than oceans, faster than almost anywhere else on Earth. And yet, despite everything, they hang on. The possibility of nature recovery is very real. Over the past 4 years, the Merlin Project has been putting that possibility to the test, involving 46 partner organisations from across Europe and backed by nearly 10 million euros of EU Horizon 2020 funding. Merlin set out to answer a deceptively simple question, not just whether we can restore Europe's fresh waters, but whether we can do it at the scale and speed that the climate and biodiversity crises actually demand. Whether we can move from isolated conservation projects to something genuinely transformative, woven into the way entire landscapes, entire economies, entire policy systems work. To do that, Merlin invested directly in 18 flagship restoration sites, rivers, streams, floodplains, peatlands and wetlands, from the Rhine Delta in the Netherlands to the Saraya Valley in Portugal, from peat bogs in Scotland to transboundary rivers across Central and Eastern Europe. By the time the project concluded, those sites had seen 121 kilometres of restored river and over 7,000 hectares of restored floodplains and wetlands. But the science, tools and arguments the project generated along the way, the monitoring frameworks, the financing guides, the sectoral strategies and policy briefs, may prove to be an even more significant legacy. This is the final episode of the Merlin Podcast, and it feels right that it should end not in one place but in two. The first is Brussels in March 2026, where Merlin presented its findings to EU and national policymakers at a joint event with three sister projects, Waterlands, Spongescapes and Spongeworks, at a moment when the Nature Restoration Regulation has become law, and member states are beginning the daunting task of writing their national restoration plans. The second place is also in Belgium, but outside, on a cold and windy day, walking the banks of a restored stream in the Scheldt catchment, where some of the restoration work that Merlin supported is now visibly taking hold in the landscape. But we begin in Brussels. Daniel Herring is the scientific coordinator of Merlin, based at the University of Duisburg-Essen in Germany. He spent 4 years at the heart of the project, overseeing the science, connecting the case studies, and making the case to policymakers that freshwater restoration is not a luxury or niche concern, but a prerequisite for the kind of climate resilient, nature-positive Europe that the Green Deal promises. He took to the stage at the final Merlin policy event to sum up what the project had found, what it had learned, and what he believed still needs to happen.
So, Merlin was basically about the restoration of small streams, of large rivers and their floodplains, and of peatlands and wetlands. We invested about 10 million euro into 18 case studies where we actually performed restoration measures. And we were working very closely with six economic sectors, ranging from hydropower to the insurance industry, to develop, well, sector-specific restoration strategies. Our case studies ranged from northern Finland down to Portugal and Israel. And each of these case studies was basically a massive restoration project that existed before Merlin, and to which we then added additional restoration measures, and we evaluated, of course, the effects also of the existing measures. Merlin was funded under the so-called Green Deal call of Horizon 2020. It turned in its course of action basically into some sort of support action also for the implementation of the nature restoration regulation. And together with our partner projects, we published the science paper and also a couple of policy briefs on this topic. And this is also, well, a kind of anchor for this talk today. In general, we approached restoration from two different perspectives. So top-down and bottom-up. And the bottom-up component, well, it included basically evaluation of targets, measures, and effects of all these measures we addressed. It included the so-called regional scalability plans that I will explain in a minute. And it included something that I, well, would like to call projectification. What is it? So projectification means basically that several projects, one after the other, are performed in the same area. Let's take the Danube downstream of Austria as an example. Here, the responsible water authority, via Donau, well, it's basically connecting the river and its floodplain on a length of 50 kilometers. And Merlin added to this, and we connected around 11 hectares. Or let's take, well, the example in Finland. Here we revetted about 120 hectare former peat extraction site, but this adds to an overall endeavor of about, well, revetting 20,000 hectare in that area. Or the example from Poland, the Campinas National Park close to the capital. Here, basically, in a sequence of two Life Plus projects, and then afterwards Merlin was implemented, and altogether we revetted about 6,000 hectare in that area. And this basically is an important message from my point of view for the implementation of the nature restoration regulation. We have all these existing cores, areas where a lot of restoration experience has been collected, for example, through Life Plus projects, and we can, well, easily use these to extend these with additional measures. What were the effects of all these different restoration actions? We evaluated these against a large number of criteria, environmental criteria, for example, greenhouse gas emissions or water storage capacity, social criteria, for example, participants in stakeholder meetings, and also economic criteria such as the numbers of green jobs created or private finance mobilized. And if we summarize now these 18 projects and this multitude of criteria, we can say basically that in about 80% of the cases, the combinations of project and criteria, we had a positive impact of restoration, not only in the environmental area, but also in the social and economic area. So we can conclude here that restoration measures, they have multiple impacts, not only on the environment, but also on the society. And these synergies, these are essential arguments to implement more restoration measures. Where to move on now from these 18 case studies? For each of these case studies, we drafted a so-called regional scalability plan, which outlines basically the options we have in the direct surrounding to even extend this restoration core. Again, we return to Poland. The regional scalability plan for the Campinas National Park outlines the finalization of the revetting measures in the national park, but also first steps in the surrounding. Or for example, our example in Hungary, the Tisza floodplain. Here we identified all the floodplain areas that could be connected to the river and brought this into a general concept. So basically, after Merlin, the next steps are prepared and could be implemented, for example, in the framework of the nature restoration regulation. And well, we can basically, from these existing cores, spread and upscale in the surrounding landscapes. As the authorities, the stakeholders, and the general public, they are all aware about what restoration is, and they have already benefited from restoration. A short look on the top-down components of Merlin. We start with the so-called sectoral strategies. We worked very closely with a community of practice of six economic areas: agriculture, hydropower, peat extraction, navigation, water sanitation, and insurances. And for each of those, we basically identified options how they can contribute to restoration. We identified, of course, the challenges that are associated and actions how best to overcome this. And these were co-developed in, well, with representatives of these sectors, and in many cases, besides the strategies, also led, well, to policy briefs that are even briefer and even shorter, for example, here exemplified for the sector agriculture. We can summarize our experiences basically that there is a lot of room for cooperation with economic sectors in restoration, but, well, there are, of course, sector-specific implementation challenges always. The key for the large-scale success, especially of the nature restoration regulation, were certainly the intense cooperation with the agricultural sector. Robert Conrad already asked us who will pay for all this. We developed a financial strategy for restoration that we'll further explain in a minute. And we also, well, stepped into a couple of, let's say, unusual sources of financing, so deviating from the default option of just using public money, corporate donations, biodiversity offsetting, sponsorship for natural areas, and various others. I think we need to demystify this term of private financing a little bit. It is currently still a minor source of restoration. So the investors in our consortium always say we are grant addicted, and that's probably true. Private financing currently has a minor role, but there are certain areas where we really at least crossed with a toe this border. This can be extended. Last point I would like to mention are our learning tools. We developed the so-called Merlin Academy, which is a tool we are really proud of, where much of our results have been, well, converted into training materials for the community of practice. This includes learning modules where you even can do an exam, but also all the webinars we have done in the course of Merlin and the policy briefs and very nice podcasts. You might hear them on your travel back. They are really worth to listen. And all these basically contribute to the exchange within and with the community of practice. That's really important, I think, and we can just underline that there are nowadays plenty of promising learning resources. Last slide. What can we recommend from Merlin in a nutshell for the implementation of the nature restoration regulation? I think it is important to capitalize on this multitude of successful projects. We can really use these as cores and develop restoration from these on. We can use synergies with various sectors and count on these multiple benefits. Cooperation with economic sectors is a key, especially with agriculture. And we can benefit from a lot of experiences and learning platforms. Thank you for this overview, and we will continue now with Waterlands.
That was Daniel Herring, speaking in Brussels to a room full of the people who write the regulations, allocate the funding, and draft the plans that will determine what happens to Europe's rivers and wetlands over the next decade. It's a particular kind of presentation, precise, evidenced, politically aware, conducted in the language of directives and targets and implementation timelines. But there's another kind of conversation that happens in this field. It happens outside, in all weathers, on the banks of rivers and streams where the restoration work actually takes place, where you can see the water moving differently than it did before, where the vegetation on the bank has grown, where you notice, if you look carefully, that something is returning. Shortly after the Brussels event, we headed west to the Scheldt catchment in Belgium, where Merlin supported restoration work on small streams, to walk and talk with two people who've spent years not just thinking about freshwater restoration, but getting it done. Sebastian Burke is the project coordinator of Merlin, who's led the project from its earliest days. And Ellis Penning is a researcher and practitioner who now coordinates Spongescapes, one of a new generation of EU projects continuing the work that Merlin and its sister projects have begun, keeping water in the landscape, slowing it down, giving it room. Here's Ellis and Sebastian.
I have to say that Merlin was quite a success. And this is because the project, first time ever, at least in my experience, tried to bring together the various aspects of what is relevant to do proper restoration. Proper ecological or freshwater restoration, and that this is not only an ecological task, but a societal task, and we try to bring more light, shed more light into the issues that have to be faced, and Merlin tried to do so, and there was a lot of learning, but of course towards the end we can also see that new questions arose which need to be tackled in the time after Merlin, with new projects or with the people that do the implementations on the ground.
Yeah, probably leads quite neatly onto talking to you, Ellis. Same question to you. What are your reflections on Merlin as a whole and the week we've spent together?
Well, it's what I think is really interesting that Merlin had so many cases, 18 cases that all bring their own context, ranging from Portugal to Finland and all the way to Israel and Bosnia, and everything that we see in all the different countries is so much also shaped by the people involved. And what I found really nice is that in all of the cases, implementation of the measures, it wasn't easy. And it takes so much time, and much more time than you might expect, because there's so many things to do if it comes to talking to the stakeholders, getting their agreements, permitting, arranging for everything. And we see that what we can learn from that is that what Sebastian was also saying, each project that we have is just a stepping stone in a much longer trajectory, right? And you see that some of these projects are generational efforts. We have one in the Netherlands where I come from, Room for the Rivers. It started off after the floods in 1995, and we're still busy with it. So it also takes perseverance of the people involved that they actually do this. And I find that is really interesting to see. But you also see that there's a learning not only through monitoring and data, but also through storytelling. And that people are really also talking about all these troubles, and having that exchange between the cases has been really, really inspiring. Merlin started off very much from the focus on ecosystem restoration. And with SpongeWorks, which is a similar project in its size, and where there's also measures being implemented, we take a slightly more integrated view to what kind of measures are needed to restore the landscape, to make it more climate resilient, to improve the soils, but also the water system, the full hydrological cycle. And that brings that you go from having basically also a single source and a single goal to these integrated goals. And that also brings more willingness from a larger group of stakeholders to really get together and see, like, hey, there's multiple problems in this area, how can we solve them together? And I find that that is what this climate resilience thinking is helping also the ecological restoration of things, because that is just one of the many measures that you need to do there.
Yeah. And does this kind of theme chime with you, Seb, this Merlin as part of a lineage, another stepping stone in the right direction?
Yeah, I may like to react to what Ellis said before, in terms of it takes time to implement the measures. I was positively surprised by how well we managed to complete the measures that we planned for within this 4.5 years time frame. And including that we asked for this half-year extension, which was necessary for several cases. But this design that you have to act within a project cycle of 4 years or 4.5 years is an incentive for many
to speed up
and really to get things done in the time, because there wouldn't be a chance for them to get the money for doing the implementation if they wouldn't have finished them in time. Yeah. And I guess that this is the relevant design for action within projects, that you are then in a hurry or under a pressure to finish. And this is also what we hear from the case studies, that they said, we would have never done this measure if there weren't the project with the deadlines and the money involved.
Yeah,
but what you also see is that the things that have been implemented, they're basically pieces of the puzzle, right? And we're on the big goal is to lay the whole puzzle. So you need all the individual puzzle pieces and join them together to really get the, like, say, what we call landscape scale effect. And I think that this is something where the EU projects, they are very helpful because they give that reasoning, but also to show that you're not alone in your struggle. I had that in the sponge works very much, that people sometimes said, I feel that I am alone in my quest to do better. But then you are with 100 people, like we are here as well, and it's, oh, I'm not alone. And there's a lot of good things happening.
Yeah,
if you see the amount
helpful.
Of cases,
yeah, absolutely.
If you would put all the, we are all with sister projects. Merlin was together with 3 other SpongeWorks, is together with 2 other Sponge projects. Mm-hmm. The amount of cases throughout Europe is really encouraging in that perspective.
But what I'm worried about slightly is what we saw in Merlin overviewing the implementation is that there was a lot of changes in plan, meaning that the cases wanted to do certain kind of implementations, but then there were obstacles and they found a way to overcome these obstacles by reverting to other areas or to other measures. And if this is the course of action, the usual course of action, how can we ever get to an objective of landscape scale restoration with all the functionality if you always fall back to the most opportunistic solution of things?
Yeah, it's a low-hanging fruit versus the tough decisions, right? And that is, I think you have to do both in a way. But I also see that having a vision for that larger puzzle, that is where you have to start from, because that also brings stakeholders together in seeing how, when you have a joint vision for a landscape and you see what everyone has to contribute to that, you can have an easier dialogue on, okay, if I do something and you do something, together we make something stronger.
But if it's very much about a catchment scale or a landscape with many different landowners, and if you only need a single landowner saying no, what does a vision help here, you know?
That is a difficult one too. I think you don't need something we were talking about the other day is that the Water Framework Directive, its core philosophy was very much a carrot, in that it provides us with so many benefits if we would restore our water systems and our soil systems as well, actually, because of all the goodness that it brings. So its philosophy is a carrot, but we made it into a stick in having to meet everything. And if you don't, you're the bad guy. But I think that if you would go back to that idea of it being more of a carrot, it's easier to talk about it with people.
Yeah.
So it's also about how you talk about it. What I learned very much is that it matters a lot where people come from, their starting point. And if you are coming from a country where government isn't the main player or organizing in ecosystem restoration, you have a very different starting point than somewhere where the government has very clear goals and wants to put in big amounts of money for that. And you see that throughout Merlin, that these differences, they exist in Europe. And that also makes that what is the next step for them is very different for those different countries. And I think it's something that we might better reflect on, and also how we are dealing with European policies. And how can we help the locations where it's NGOs that have to drive everything. And we see that also in the regional scalability plans, which I think is something to be very proud of in Merlin, where we asked each of the case studies, look forward for the next 30 years. Where do you want to be? Where can you get? And do that together with all the stakeholders in your area. And they made really interesting plans that now also feed kind of inspiration to the national plans for the nature restoration regulation. So I think that's an important legacy from Merlin for each of the individual case areas.
So geography really matters.
It matters, but also political setting.
Yeah, I would really, because we try to break it down in the synthesis of the case studies into clusters of cases with similar contexts. So we call that the structural settings. And I completely agree with you, Alice, here that it differs in terms of the funding continuity that is provided to a case, whether you live from project to project and you don't know whether there will be another project after the one you're carrying out now, or if you have like a government setting that allows you still to operate within projects and still you need the projects fueling the action, but your entire governance system is completely different in this regard, and this allows you to do larger steps forward. And I guess the insights we gain from Merlin can be helpful here also for the support, for instance, by the European Commission, by the money that can be spent into these activities to make tailor-made support depending on the structural context of where the case is located. Either it is driven by non-governmental actors like WWF in our case, or by the more government program driven actions.
And so let's sum up, let's finish. As we're walking across this wide open field in the spring sunshine, why does Merlin matter? And what does it matter to you? What does it mean to you?
To me personally, Merlin was a very interesting experience with a super steep learning curve. So coming from freshwater ecology, of course policy related tasks that I've been working on over the last decades, I'm now at a completely different position in my professional life, with a much broader understanding on all the relevant enablers that are connected to proper action, restoration action on the ground. And now looking forward, also this for me means being an academic working at the university to draw lessons also for the academic literature, but also more tangible to those who shape policies and those who have to implement policies, helping them to take action much better than we're currently seeing.
Yeah, as for me, it's also been a learning curve, but also very interesting to be able to go beyond your comfort zone, right? And I think that is something that for everyone was the case, that suddenly you had to talk about economic sectors and to talk about like what is financial setting or economic settings and reasoning, which is something we're not trained in. And if you're not trained into that, you see it also in the case teams, they came often from an ecological perspective and they had to learn about these different languages that are being spoken in order to ensure that you are able to widen your scope, but also to see that if we're talking about freshwater restoration, it also implies that you might need to take measures on the land and to talk about what is the impact of how we are managing our land and how our stakeholders relations to the from the land with the land but also with the water system. And so we are taking a lot of that thinking from Merlin into the sponge scapes and sponge works, where we are using methods that have been developed within Merlin, such as the optimization plans, to also help the next set of generation of cases, so to say, in saying, okay, can we also reflect better on how we are doing it? And how we are doing it not only from an ecosystem restoration perspective, but from that more climate resilience perspective.
Yeah. And if I may contribute to this, just a brief reflection on the Merlin project itself and working within this project. What I really appreciated was the atmosphere that we have created in this project to provide a safe space for everyone to collaborate and to raise maybe concerns or ideas and to bring it to the table, and also the motivation that this safe environment created, and that was such a inspiration for me also to coordinate this in a setting that was so friendly, open and and yeah, warm in a way.
The spirit that Sebastian describes has run through the entire Merlin project and been a driving force in making it so successful. But now, Merlin is over. The Horizon 2020 funding has run its course, the deliverables have been submitted, and the 46 partner organisations that spent 4 years working together on this project have moved on to new work, much of it, encouragingly, building directly on what Merlin started. SpongeScape, SpongeWorks, FutureLakes, the ecosystem of EU restoration science and practice is larger, better connected, and better equipped than it was when the project began. What Merlin ultimately demonstrates is that the freshwater restoration challenge in Europe and beyond is not primarily technical. The core knowledge exists. The restoration techniques largely work. The benefits, ecological, social, economic, are real and measurable. The monitoring frameworks needed to track them are now in place. The financial instruments needed to fund them are on the shelf. The policy frameworks, imperfect and contested as they are broadly aligned with the right ambitions. What's been missing, and what this project has spent 4 years beginning to build, is the connective tissue, the shared language between ecologists and economists, trust between land managers and conservation organisations, policy coherence across ministries that have historically operated in silos, and financial structures that allow private money to flow towards public goods. These things are harder to create than a river restoration plan. They take longer to take root than a riverbank wildflower meadow. And they require a kind of persistence in the face of political setbacks, budget pressures, and the perennial human tendency to treat environmental cost as someone else's problem. Europe's entering what may well be its most consequential decade for the natural environment. Whether that decade delivers on the promise of the Green Deal will depend less on grand declarations than on the slow, patient work of implementation, the monitoring, the financing, the negotiation, the citizen science, the policy reform. Merlin has shown what that work looks like and provides tools to make it easier. The question now is whether enough people, in government offices, in farm organisations, in insurance boardrooms, on riverbanks across the continent, will pick them up and take them forward. If you want to explore the Merlin project in more depth, then everything, the research, the tools, the learning academy, the case studies, the policy briefs, are freely available at project-merlin.eu. You can read an accompanying long read article covering the science, financing and politics of bringing Europe's freshwaters back to life alongside this episode at freshwaterblog.net. The Merlin project was funded by the European Commission's Horizon 2020 programme. This podcast was presented and produced by me, Rob St. John, and the theme music is by project coordinator Sebastian Berg's band, Scala. Background music is by Scott Buckley. Thank you to everyone who's tuned into this podcast over the last 4 years. We appreciate you lending us your ears. You can hear more stories about freshwater restoration in Europe on the new FutureLakes podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.